Welcome back to After Dark number 5, and we continue on with our conversation with John Vodnik about the closing of the Voice of America facility in Mason, Ohio, or otherwise known as Bethany, Ohio. Let's jump right into our conversation, which we left off on side one. '96, let's suppose a Republican president is elected. This whole thing just turns right around 180 degrees. What would it take to reinstitute Bethany as a site? You're talking about the replacement of the antennas. Now, the transmitters, unless they take those out of the facility.
Well, the information we got the other day was the station apparently will be mothballed for two or three years. So the transmitters will still be there. They won't be taken out until the site's ready for them overseas in Sri Lanka or wherever they decide they want to send them.
Mm-hmm.
It could be down in Tinian in the Marianas and the site they want to build down there for Radio Free Asia. So they possibly could go down there. So they'll sit where they are for at least 2 years, more than likely. Yeah, so things turn around in 96. They could put it back on the end. I don't know where they'll find the crew. All the crew's going to be gone. They're going to be out west or out north or east or wherever. And a lot of folks, there's so much depression and I don't know, dislike for the government right now. If they were asked to come back, they'd probably tell them to stick it where the sunshine don't hit.
I'm going to ask you a very personal question. How old are you?
47.
And to my last time I was down, you seemed like you were one of the younger guys. There's a few older guys.
I'm one of the older ones now.
Oh, are you? There's a lot more. Some of the older guys.
Some of the older ones. They offered early out buyouts, $25,000 if you leave government and say you won't come back. And we had three people take it. We had a couple retire since then.
Now, some of the thing I've found out recently is, at least in the television business, trying to find a good RF technician is very, very hard.
Right.
Several years from now, is there going to be anyone around that is capable of putting that site on the air?
Hopefully one or two of us will still be in the area.
Okay, I mean, because you could get a contract engineer or somebody that does that, but I mean, I'm talking about fully staffing that facility.
Not easily. There's a group of about four of us that said, if somebody would buy the station, we'd be willing to stay. Because those transmitters are something you have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some guy, a contract engineer off the street can walk in there and he's not going to be able to run that radio station. Those transmitters just have their own little individual quirks and as all transmitters do.
Mm-hmm.
But at those kind of power levels, those quirks can get real interesting.
So I remember the Collins has a tendency to arc.
Yeah, internal arcs, yeah, burn holes through the sides, yeah. As I said before, I now know the true meaning of electric blue.
Okay, now that you've got, how many curtains is it?
There's eight curtains.
Eight curtains.
Each one has two sets of four dipoles.
Okay.
I'll take that back. Two sets of 12 dipoles in there. Three dipoles and four stack four high, so 12.
Okay.
And each frequency band has two sets, so it's like, 24 dipoles per band or something like that.
Now, what frequency range can that curtain operate at?
From 9 through 26 megs.
Okay, so
each curtain will operate two bands.
So basically, you're using the curtain array for the 9 through 26 and then the rhombics for the frequencies under.
No, we use the curtains at night towards Africa on 9 megs.
Okay.
And then we use the rhombics for Africa. What the heck frequency is it early in the morning? 95.30, I believe it is. No, I'm taking that back. 7405. 7405 runs on one of those mile-long rhombics we have out where the road crosses under it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the Nova Scotia antennas. I don't know why we're sending English to Nova Scotia at 9 o'clock at night, but...
Somebody in the programming department's got it all figured out, though.
Yeah, really.
Now, is that... There's a big difference between programming as a government toward a foreign country and programming from a radio station standpoint. I mean,
right.
Are these antennas and are these frequencies going to be usable to anyone who's a private broadcaster? I mean, are these?
Yeah, if that's their target area, sure.
Okay, so.
Here again, the best bet they would have would be a minimum of two rotatable curtain antennas.
Mm-hmm.
That way they can pick their target area. And give them 360-degree coverage. They, from the center of the country, they can hit anywhere they want, for the most part.
And actually, when you consider the physics of the situation, the site of Mason is fairly decent.
Oh yeah.
Now, what benefits would say Greenville have over Bethany?
Greenville right now hits East Africa. I'm sorry, where we come down on the west coast. They cover the east coast, into the Caribbean, Caribbean area and South America, Central America. They can hit the east coast, I believe it is, and we hit the west coast.
Okay.
So the coverage areas are almost identical. That's part of the reason they want to get rid of it. They said there's too much overlapping coverage.
Now, as far as the technical criteria of both sites, I mean, how does Greenville rank as far as equipment and antennas and everything to that of Mason?
Right now, probably pretty much the same. They have four new 500-kilowatt prototype transmitters, and they just shut down the old 500 kilowatts. Where two 250s run through a combiner. They turn those off because they didn't have staff to operate them. Same thing we have here. We're down to two people on a shift. They were down to two people, and I saw a note the other day says sometimes they have nobody. If somebody calls in, nobody for overtime and nobody to come in.
So they don't broadcast?
Yeah. Somebody wants to go home and has to stay.
What about Delano and Dixon? Why did Dixon get decommissioned? I mean, did that have a lot of repeatability?
I really don't know that much about Dixon. One of the guys works there at the station with me was in Dixon both times it closed. And he's got his own opinions of why it closed. I really don't know for sure. But Delano, their coverage area would be Mexico, they say. Mm-hmm. Be southern Mexico and central South America, and then their feeder into Philippines.
Okay. And when you're talking about a feeder, this is actually a single sideband transmission, which is then picked up in a relay.
No, it'd be the AM transmission.
Oh, would it?
Yeah.
Okay.
The AM site. Yeah, I think the only one doing any independent sideband feeder transmission is Greenville. Okay. Ours are shut down except for 15 minutes a week to make sure they still run.
Kind of like a test.
Yeah.
Okay. Has there been any cutback or any change in the programming? I mean, obviously, if you guys don't have the frequencies and you don't have the stations on the air, the people aren't going to be sending you programming that they can't play.
Right. Last Friday, we got that operation memo and it cut almost all the Russian programming from HF and moved it to satellite for the placement services. A lot of the language services have been changed to what they call feed services. Matter of fact, in 1996, I forget what day it is now, but VOA will stop being VOA as we know it now, and it'll become a language service into the Board of Broadcasting, which is your transmission service. So RFE, RL, VOA will all just become an input on somebody's audio console.
I mean, what is
so,
that?
So, okay, engineering is a screwed up mess.
Yeah.
Engineering has been separated away from Voice of America with this consolidation. It's become an entity of its own, and programming is shifted off in their own little groups. So Voice of America, the way it's put together now, you know, includes engineering or transmission programming, quote engineering. That's all been separated out. In the separate little groups in 1996.
So there's really no consolidation of any one faction. It's all just like little groups all kind of working on their own, and then
somebody through an audio board and it comes out
the other
end. Right.
Okay. Is this something which is being done as a cost saving measure, or is this because of audience research, or I mean, what's there's obviously got to be something there that somebody feels is...
They're claiming cost savings. They claim they're going to save $800 million.
Hey, they're going to save $800 million by doing this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yet, we know from research done on AM and FM that actual employee costs and engineering operations costs have decreased by more than 27% since 1984.
Okay.
All
right.
I guess the mathematics side of myself here is trying to figure out exactly where the savings are coming from.
Well, the American Federation of Government Employees Union, which I'm the union steward for at the station, our office back in Washington has been trying to figure that out also. Where's the savings? Because it just doesn't add up. We looked at the plan that they sent out, which we weren't given a copy of the plan. We got them through various and assorted ways. Yeah, back in July, I was given, faxed a copy of a note from one of the consolidation planning meetings, which showed 91 people to be gone by the end of physical 94, which had been, September 31st.
Mm-hmm.
I made that mention of that to the guys at work, and they called Greenville. And the official announcement was supposed to have been made the next day. So when the engineering managers walked into the building, it was all over the place what was about to happen. So they blew that party out of the water. And it's just been, you know, cat and mouse game ever since. They said, no, that's not really what's going to happen. And I said, well, you know, explain it to me. It says here are 91 people, and it shows the, you know, staffing of 22 at Bethany with 22 people being, you know, eliminated. I was now, you know, that looks like a wholesale firing. Oh, no, well, that's not what that is. Well, then explain it to me. He says you're going to cut back all the positions. But,
Now, this is actually for termination of employment.
Termination of employment.
Okay.
I don't think, spell it what you want. It means getting fired to me.
Yeah. But, I mean, what do you, okay, you got 22 employees there. Now, I imagine you probably have a couple secretaries or, you know, office people.
Yeah, we had one secretary, an admin officer, and a manager.
Okay, but and predominantly you're talking all engineers.
All technicians, yeah.
So everyone's going to be out.
Right. We went from 20, I want, did I say 22? 22, 21 people. I forget the exact number, first part of the year. We're down to 16 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Of which 10 of those are technical. We have 4 supervisors, 6 technicians.
Okay.
So we're running, as I say, 2 people on a shift.
What are some of the things that are going through the minds of the remaining employees as far as what they're going to do?
I really don't know. They've contracted with a company called Star Mountain. These people are working with DOD with their cutbacks, and they're going to help us locate jobs. They'll be in the station for 90 days. And they're going to scour the area trying to find jobs, see what's available, teach us how to write resumes, and the government, SF-171, the application form for the government. They're going to give us leads, teach us how to do interviews, and then send us out on our own merry way and hope for the best. They have about a 70%
success rate,
yeah.
But I mean, is this going to be in a like field? I mean, like, is John Bondi going to maybe end up at another radio station, or is this like you might be working at the McDonald's that speaks Spanish across the road?
No, they said it would be, and hopefully it's comparable a salary anyway is what we have. But they're going to also offer retraining, schooling, that type of thing. So we're waiting to see what's going to happen. They won't be there until after the reduction of force notice is out, which will be, they say right now, November 11th, and that all depends if the union negotiations are finished by then. If not, it'll be after that.
Is there any obligation by the government to provide you with another job in another field, such as, I'm just, you know, pulling something out of the hat, but I mean, like maybe operating as a technician for the U.S. Marshal or something?
Yeah, if we were being riffed, going through a reduction of force, we're going through a closing, so it's different. Greenville is going through a reduction of force. So those folks will have...
They'll be reassigned.
Probably, they have a better chance of reassignment than we do.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're being closed, we're just being shoved out the door. As I say, they're going to offer retraining and job placement help, that type of thing. But they don't really have to offer us any jobs. They did say in the meeting we had last week that, you know, maybe if somebody with some television background, there's 2 or 3 of us there with television, there was a possibility we could come up to Washington and work for WorldNet TV. That was an option.
There has been some comments made about listenership possibly going down, although I tend to doubt it. I mean, I still listen to my Sony 2010 a lot. I mean, do you foresee that there's going to be a massive exodus from the HF bands to the point where these stations are not going to be useful anymore?
No, I can see with direct broadcast satellite 20, 25 years possibly, where the receivers are out, where you can get a DBS receiver as cheap as you can get a shortwave receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you can get a DBS receiver for $59, I can get a cheap Radio Shack. Yeah, okay, I can see HF going down the tubes then, but in the countries which VOA targets, Africa, the former Soviet Union, all through there, they're having just tremendously hard financial problems. No, I don't see HF going away. Even in South America, where they say the folks are doing real well, I don't see it going away.
Does VOA do any type of service into some of these countries which are at war, such as Yugoslavia and to some part Kuwait? And
yeah, we got a station going. We have the AM station in Kuwait. They're building a shortwave station there right now, or there's plans of it. I think they're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to tell from day to day.
You have all these the radio stations that you got listeners in these areas. You have to serve them in some way. I mean, are there going to be facilities enough to be able to provide them?
No. With placement, with what VOA is doing now, no.
And with more and more stations coming on the air as far as private concerns, I mean, we've seen probably, you know, there was a big thing maybe 10 years ago when WRNO Worldwide came on, and mm-hmm. it was like, holy cow, you know, a
commercial shortwave.
Commercial shortwave. Gee, who'd ever thunk it? And now you got all these radio stations.
Radio in Miami and...
There's... WEWN and I'm trying to think what
WCR.
WCR, yeah.
JRC, whatever it is over in
Nashville.
JCR.
JCR. So, I mean, you're getting a whole bunch of these stations on the air. I mean, obviously somebody out there thinks there's an audience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for the religious broadcaster, there's an audience. The government broadcaster, if you listen to the government, there's not an audience. But the people are still there. They can... the people are there for the religious broadcasters, they're not there for the government broadcaster.
Now, you go back a few months, or maybe it was a year or so, I'm trying to think when it was, you ran a DX test on VOA at one time. You were signing some cards at one time for verification.
Oh, when we turned the new transmitters on in 91,
mm-hmm.
and then we ran a stereo test for EDXC 2 years ago.
Okay.
And last year, they ran the EDXC stereo thing out of Morocco.
How many areas did you get replies from?
Oh, bunches of places. And stuff from Bethany, in places the antennas don't even point.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Northern Europe. Quite a few reports out of Northern Europe, Germany.
And how was the signal reception according to the letters?
Good.
Good?
Yeah.
And this is the site we're decommissioning?
And this is the site we're decommissioning. Well, considering the fact that we don't normally broadcast those areas, I think on the commissioning of the transmitters, we ran one of the curtain antennas, Southern Europe antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And the reports are like 4.5, 4.59, you know, or 4.55, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
There's no nines in this, no O in ham. But like 4.55, 4.54s. I'd say that it's, you know, a fairly good report off the side of the antenna, off the side of the curtain, or the rhombic antenna pointed at South Africa, 100 degrees from Bethany, roughly. Stations in Germany. I'm getting, you know, like 3.3 and 3 type reports, which off the side of the antenna says that's a real good report.
And from what you could gather from the information that the SWO would provide you, I mean, are these guys with sophisticated antenna systems that are having super high preamplifiers, or are these guys with Sony 2010s?
2010s, Panasonic receivers, and 30 feet of wire.
That's
75
it.
Feet of wire, yeah.
So it's a decent signal.
Oh, yeah. So that, you know, it's a real good signal. All those reports, by the way, from the stereo test and the commissioning test, all that notebooks full of those reports are now at the Committee to Preserve Radio Verifications. They're in Boston right now.
Good. Good.
I'll put away on, make sure that got put away before anything happened to it.
The actual transmission of your signal from the Bethany site is one which has a good propagation and such. Down the road, if they decide they're going to start decommissioning, say, Greenville, what are we going to go to? Are we still just talking about these little sites?
Little AM/FM sites all over the world.
And and hopefully somebody doesn't turn it off, you know, pull the plug on them.
Yeah, it's my guess, my gut feeling. And I've told the guys in Delano, don't give up on their congresspeople yet. You know, can just stay on their backs. They're going to decommission roughly half of Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard two or three stories. First, they were going to shut down the receiver site. Then they were going to shut down one of the transmitter sites. Now they're going to shut down the receiver site and the transmitter site and operate just one shift out of it. So it changes from day to day. The only reason Delano hasn't been picked on yet is they have a new antenna out there, what the VOA calls a super antenna. It's a new curtain antenna. It's 450 or 60 feet high and just tremendously huge long. They can feed like 3 or 4 transmitters in this thing at one time. It's also very expensive to maintain. When it was built, they put the slewing switches in upside down and filled them with water. So, you know, it's extremely expensive. They have six six riggers, I think. Six riggers, I guess, antenna riggers in Delano, and two of them are just for that antenna. And I told the guys in Delano, I says, you missed this time, but, you know, don't get off your congressman's back, because in a couple of years they're going to write that thing off as too expensive, they're going to shut your site down too. I think the plans are to shut down all stateside shortwave broadcasting.
And then from that point, we're dependent upon all foreign...
Dependent on all foreign broadcast
services.
Or, you know, governments to... They have a signed agreement with one of the local governments that said, we will broadcast your program. And I said, what good is your agreement? What good are our agreements? Now they do what they want anyway.
Mm-hmm. What's this receiver site you're talking about down in Delano? Greenville?
That's where the satellite site. That's where their KU-band, C-band uplink, downlinks are. It used to be HF receiver site. It still is. That's where the main office is at Greenville. The manager's office and everything are all out there.
So, I mean, is this where you're uplinking from Washington to...
Yeah, Washington is uplinked to the satellite, and here in Bethany we pick up the downlink. Greenville picks up the downlink. In case of a uplink failure in Washington, Greenville has a capability coming up on the same frequency on the uplink and refeeding. This, you know, at Bethany, theoretically, we'd never know it ever changed.
So if Washington's transmitter fails, they have the ability to be able to take a feed from Washington, like by a telephone or something like that.
They have a fiber optic circuit down to Greenville. They have a microwave link to Greenville, which both up all pretty much all the time. And, you know, as I say, theoretically, we wouldn't know what happened. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. if the thing in Washington goes down, we're off the air 5 or 6 minutes while people physically go put cables in to make it play, because it was never put together right in the first place.
So it was never completed.
Never completed.
So you got all that satellite stuff down there in Greenville. I'm looking at it from a dollars and cents point. I mean, it seems like the Greenville is more expensive than Bethany to operate.
Oh yeah, and they also talking about now moving the satellite site over to one of the transmitter sites, which is going to be real interesting, because that's going to put VOA on optical fiber optics and microwave while the satellite system's down. For about 3 or 4 months while they rebuild the thing. I don't know. I would imagine. I shouldn't say imagine. I really don't know what these clowns have in mind. If they intend to put up new satellite antennas or tear down what they have, move them, and reinstall them.
Are the people who are making these decisions actually engineers, and do they really know?
No. They don't have a clue.
Okay.
The director of engineering is a civil engineer, I think it is. His claim to fame is he bought printing presses for the Treasury Department. Operations director, I'm not sure what his background is, other than he was in the Air Force. His right-hand man claims to have been in broadcasting since he was 15 years old, but he's also the same one who told us when he came down to visit us that the transmitter went off the air, and if it couldn't be corrected by resetting circuit breaker, the program would just be lost. They would make no effort to put it on the air. What kind of broadcasting is that? And plus, down in Greenville, they want to go to a one-person shift.
But they can't because of those transmitters, right? I mean, the way they're set up.
Well, this is it's a satellite site. They want to go to one person per shift there, which is a safety hazard. They say there's no high voltages, but those KU-band HPAs have just bunches of voltage and current in there. And so now, if in fact they get their way, if the thing was shut down, VOA is off worldwide till somebody can come out there to be with the guy while he fixes it.
So if the satellite facility does shut off, just a quirk or something like that, basically the whole network will be off.
The network's off
until somebody
at least over in Europe. Now they say they have a backup satellite.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how well it works. I haven't checked into that too well, but they say they have another satellite which could cover it, but not as well. Because what happens is the KU band goes from Washington to the bird down to Greenville, and the overseas programming is stripped, well, with the old system anyway, was stripped off and run through a C-band, uplink back up to another satellite for C-band reception over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So if the C-band HPA quits, all of Europe's off the air.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but if they're going to be using satellite, there was an issue... I'm trying to think exactly when it was, when one of the Chicago TV stations had their studio-to-transmitter link on microwave interrupted by a pornographic movie.
Well, Channel 11, WTTW.
Right. And then there was also a case, I'm going to say 5 years ago, of Captain Video that actually uplinked on top of another satellite service. Now, what's to keep? Let's suppose all these little stations are being fed by a satellite or fed by subcarrier of a satellite system, and somebody just decides that hey, I don't like a VOA, and they have the equipment to do it.
Okay, I'll play devil's advocate. I'll be the VOA engineering person I talked to about this very thing.
Okay.
And he said it's not a problem because the satellites are designed with the receiving antenna on one side and the transmit antenna on the other side, and there's isolation between them, and you can't do that.
I say that's incorrect because of the way that satellite is positioned. You could still get RF up to it.
Right. That's what I told him. I said it's 23,000 miles away. It's a pinpoint in the sky, front and back, looks identical. I found out now that most television remote trucks have the ability, if the person running the truck has the right equipment and the right kind of knowledge, he can physically take the satellite out of orbit, shoot it off into Never Never Land.
By rendering commands to the jet
commands
propulsion.
To the propulsion system, yeah. if he can get on the right uplink frequency for the command and control circuits, and with the right stuff, he can physically shoot the thing off and never never be seen again.
So basically what happened with Anik, was it 6 months ago where they lost the CBC network because the satellite, decided to take a tumble? I mean, that could happen to the entire
sure.
VOA system.
Sure.
Doesn't seem like, there's anyone in control.
No, there's no one of any great knowledge in control.
Who are
the folks who understand, who basically agree with me? I was talking with one last week, and he's 50% in agreement anyway. They've been told pretty much that, you know, his evaluation says that he's not a company player, and that if he doesn't like what's going on, keep his mouth shut. So he
kept his mouth shut
or lose his job.
Okay. Right. Who are some of the players in the political ring who are for the VOA?
Who are the political players on our side?
Yeah, who like some of the congressmen, state representatives, there's obviously some people who believe this is going to work.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who believe it, but nobody's had enough nerve to stand up and say we got to look at this thing again. So I don't think I can really name too many names. John Glenn's been looking at it. Metzenbaum, but he'll be out in January, so, no. Golly.
What about Congressman Oxley, who's on the Telecommunications Committee?
I don't think, unless somebody in Washington talked to him, I didn't. I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that happen. Every dumb thing that they do in engineering management goes up to the union office, which in turn goes to up to the Capitol Hill. And there's been a lot of folks real incensed up there, but not quite enough to call a thing, you know, back into committee and take a look at it. When they signed the paperwork on this thing April 30th, it became law.
Mm-hmm.
So the consolidation with Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty is now public law. The only way it can be changed is in March when it comes up for reappropriations. And, you know, there's things underway, hoping we can delay their actions until March, but it doesn't look too good.
Who are some of the people against VOA? I understand that
Joe Biden.
Okay.
The director of USIA. He's in Joe Duffy. He's on a VOA. I'm not sure where the White House stands on this thing. The whole idea in the beginning was good. Consolidate VOA with Radio Free Europe, or otherwise, Radio Free Europe with VOA. Because we were, in fact, broadcasting the same languages, the same countries, at different times of day, competing for the same audience.
Mm-hmm.
It only makes sense.
Okay.
But, you know, it's have everybody do it once instead of doing it twice for two times the money. But somewhere along the line, things have got just terribly screwed up.
Somebody's taking too much of a cost-cutting.
Yeah. Yeah, they've taken too much of a cost-cutting. They put it all in the wrong places. Our boy, Mr. Gore, wants to reinvent government, get rid of all the middle management. And he's calling for a 1 to 15 supervisor to employee ratio. The Office of Engineering has 2 supervisors for every 7/10 of a person.
Okay.
Just a little top heavy. What they've said is, you know, they're going to eliminate that by 1996. They'll be down to 160 people. They're at about 215 right now. So they're going to get rid of that. But the director of engineering had a little speech the other day. We got down on a satellite, down like on one of the unused channels. And he told his folks, says, you know, don't worry. If you get a reduction in force notice, don't worry about it. You know, you won't lose your job. We'll just put you somewhere else.
But again, that doesn't apply to you guys.
But that doesn't apply to us.
So you're kind of the...
We're the scapegoat.
Yeah, you're the scapegoat. Okay.
Right. Which, you know, that has a lot of folks at the station real incensed about the fact that the folks back in Washington are going to keep their jobs and we're losing ours. They've cut the heart right out of the VOA thing. They've eliminated programs. They've eliminated broadcasters, your announcers, your radio broadcasters. They've eliminated the technical staff in the field. But yet the incompetence in Washington is still there.
Is there anyone that they can contact, or is there anything that they can do to kind of let their voice be known?
Yeah, they need to, you know, contact their state representative. I know audio service goes all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
It might even be international, I'm not sure.
We're international.
Okay. Well, they can write till. I have no problems with overseas listeners writing in. I think that'd be great, especially if they can say, you know, that they listen to VOA and, you know, and give examples of how, you know, the Voice of America is helping in their country.
Mm-hmm.
And how a loss of programming, what the repercussions of a loss of programming would be over there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they can write to their congressmen and senators, call their local offices. Down in Cincinnati, we have numbers down there. I know their office is in Columbus here, plus the Washington offices. And just stay on the phone with them, you know, and just bury them under phone calls and mail. Actually, phone call, I think mail does more good because they have something. A phone call, they can pick up the phone and forget about.
They can jot it down on a piece of paper, but a letter is documentation.
Right. And if they can find the fax numbers, that's even better. Just fax the stuff to their offices back at the station. I don't have it with me. If I did, I'd give you numbers. I have the fax machine numbers for Metz and Baum, for Glenn, for Gore.
Mm-hmm.
And, quite a few of the senators. Yeah, the folks just need to just stay on the phone or by paper. Stay on the line with their senators saying, you know, you gotta go back and look at this. As I said, there's a lot of senators are very upset with what they saw after they took a look at the law. As per usual, it's written in governmentese, you know, everything's very vague.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally got a few of them to actually sit down and read through the law. And I gotta read it two or three times to get it all out. And they said, this is not what we wanted. This is not what we had in mind. This is not what they were told to do. But it's become law April 30th when they all signed off on it.
If enough stink is raised, as far as the loss of the programming, that's somewhere along the line, things are going to get done. I mean, is there any, here's another scenario. I mean, has some of the talk show hosts like, Rush Limbaugh and, I'm trying to think of a few others that would go along
Liddy?
And say,
Gordon Liddy
and stuff. I mean, are these our listeners, since they listen to a lot of these programs, can they bring that stuff up?
Yes, they should call up there and ask. You know, Rush and Gordon are, you know, real outspoken. They're not afraid to call a politician a crook.
Yeah,
and they should call those folks and see what they're gonna do. I've got some stuff I'm gonna send. We tried Liddy, and I think it was what we sent him was too technical and too detailed.
Mm-hmm.
So I got some other stuff. I wrote a letter to the vice president after he sent us a foolish piece of paper. two paragraphs saying, you know, Jay, we're, you know, glad to hear from our constituents.
Do you mind if I read it?
No, go ahead.
Okay, here's the letter, which was written by the vice president of the United States. It says, addressed to the Bethany Relay Station, Post Office Box 277, Mason, Ohio, 45040. It says, dear friends, thank you for contacting my office with your specific concerns regarding the consolidation of international broadcast services. I appreciate hearing from you. I'm working with the president to meet the challenges facing our country in a positive and responsible manner. We need and value the views, suggestions, and proposals of the American people, and your comments will be given careful attention. Again, thank you for letting me hear from you. Sincerely, Al Gore. All things aside, I mean, what's your personal feeling?
That's one of the most pathetic piece of paper I've seen. We really had hoped for a lot more than that. Did you notice the date on the letter, though?
June 16th, 1995.
Yes. Time flies when you're having fun.
And they castrated Dan
Quayle for spelling potato wrong, yes.
Yeah, so here we got a letter from Al Gore dated June 16th, 1995. I mean, I just don't see how we're going to be able to carry on the agenda of the United States government without having sufficient...
They're not. They're... They put themselves in a giant handicap and a disability. It's like having all the fingers cut off one hand and your hand cut off the other hand, off your other arm. It's just a stump on one side and what was a hand on the other. Yeah, it's a really bad situation for the government. As I've said on FidoNet, shortwave echo, and on the internet, shortwave area, that, yeah, I want to keep my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in this primarily to keep the VOA from destroying itself. If I keep a job, fine. If I don't keep a job, well, I will find another one. But my whole effort in this thing has been to keep the Voice of America, a valid foreign relations tool. What they plan to do, as it says in the letter, is going to leave us at the mercy of the foreign countries. We've discussed it earlier today. You send a program over to a local AM/FM station where, you like the term censorship?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It goes over there. More than likely, if it's aired at all, it'll be aired at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, mm-hmm. around their other stuff when everybody's asleep. But probably it'll be tape recorded. Once you put it on tape and you take out your trusty razor blade, you can just, you know, editing and censorship in this case are one and the same. Well, this program's 20 minutes long and we only need 15 minutes, so we'll take all the parts that our government doesn't like to make it fit.
There's also the issue of the content, too. If somebody doesn't like what you're saying, I can't remember the exact,
There was
something in Kuwait I remember happened where United States servicemen were not able to do something, which is very normal over here.
Well, when they had the radio station over there during the thing, they could only listen to, English, I think it was. They were going to run stuff in the local languages over there, and they were told they couldn't. But censorship is going on right now in Washington, in the Washington offices, even as you and I speak. About a month ago, the Greeks and Albanians apparently don't get along, never have, never will. I might have the things backwards, but the results are the same. I think the Albanians did a interview with somebody from Greece. And they gave the written copy of everything to the Greek service in case they wanted to air it. And the Greeks said, no, we can't air that because it is offensive to the Greek government. They'll shut the transmissions off. So the Albanians went back and modified things to make it, palatable for the Greek government. Now, I don't know. I consider that censorship. Congress considers it censorship.
I can see that.
The folks in Capitol Hill got real upset, but not quite upset enough. I don't know what it's going to take.
I don't either. And I sit here, like I say, blown away by the standpoint that I see it's not going to work. And you know it's not going to work. And I mean, there's got to be more people out there that have at least some common sense.
There are some people in the engineering department in that area. I've talked to a few and they say, yeah, you're right. It won't work.
But
they're far enough down the food chain that they have no input, and what it is just, you know, lots of so much crap you don't know what you're talking about.
And of course the possibility of, you know, hey, don't rock the
boat.
Don't
rock the boat. You want to work here tomorrow. How long have you worked here not counting today?
And you have some protection by the fact that you're in the union, but some of the higher ups, I imagine, don't have as good a protection.
No, most of the folks in the engineering office have no protection at all. They're not part of the union bargaining unit, so, you know, there's no protection. So they're gonna follow the party line no matter what. Believe it or not, they might not speak for it, but they won't speak against it.
Okay. Is there anything that audio service members can do other than write the congressman and stuff? We're not talking about anything that applies to the Federal Communications Commission, obviously.
No, we're
but we're basically back
to Congress.
Back to Congress.
Yeah, everything we do has to be approved by Congress. So yeah, it comes back to your senators, your local representatives, your state representatives, your local district folks. Anybody who sits in Washington has possible access to somebody on the foreign relations or government appropriations or telecommunications. They have to get them to pull this plan up. As yet, Clinton hasn't signed it. It's been laying on his desk since September, I believe. And he hasn't signed it, and they say he won't sign it until after the elections. I guess he wants to see how bad he does. And
So we're talking about possibility of having some people contact Clinton.
If they can find Clinton's phone number, great, go for it. Or fax number.
Or even address.
Or even the address. Well,
send receipted mail or something.
Yeah, you can send it to the White House, you know, whatever the street address is.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll get there. I wrote a letter to Clinton, and I got back an Al Gore-type note from Clinton after he got elected.
Mm-hmm.
I got that one framed.
What do you hope is going to happen? I mean, what realistically do you think is going to happen?
Realistically, they'll close the station. They'll mothball it. We'll run into the ANSI problem. And 3 or 4 years from now, they'll bulldoze the place and there'll be housing development. I understand that there are a few people, Mark Meese with All Ohio Scanner Club, and he's on the ANARC Executive Committee. Mark and I and a couple others and some folks in Washington, no less, are working on having a building and some of the property within the inside fenced area. You've been down and you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 4 or 5 acres, I guess, turned into a national historical society because of the building. It's Art Deco from the 30s and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to place a historical site and possibly a radio museum.
That site was also predominant in World War II.
Right. Down in Cincinnati at Channel 48 Television is the Gray Radio Museum. Jack Gray, who started the thing, used to work for the Voice of America at Bethany. And there's just, you know, bunches and bunches of old radio stuff down there. And they want the space back for the TV station. And so we're hoping that possibly we can turn the place into a museum, move all that stuff from the Gray Museum up here. On the outside chance, maybe I'll talk with Jerry Berg out in Massachusetts to see if maybe we can get the CPRV to move their headquarters out to the Bethany site if we can save it.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? That'd be the best case. The best case, actually, is not shut it down at all, I should say. But I don't think we're going to be that fortunate.
Unless there's some big heavy political pressure.
Some big pressure and some... Well, as the folks in personnel said when they were down last week, what we need is a white knight in shining armor to come riding in with, you know, with the funding and stuff to... The funding's minor.
The funding to myself is minor. I mean,
yeah, I mean $2 million, they waste that much on travel every week.
Yeah, I mean, I can see, you know, I can see from a financial standpoint that $2 million, yeah, okay, that's a lot of money for you and I.
Right.
But I mean, when you're talking about a business or a government agency, that is very, very minimal.
Yeah, as one of Senator Glenn's aides said to us when we were talking with him, he says, "The Voice of America is a small agency. The USIA is a small agency, you know. Okay, you're talking about waste. We've mentioned some waste, fraud, and abuse type things, and, you know. And to us, $35, $40, $50, $60, $200 million is a lot of money. But he said that's a small agency. That's a small amount of money.
It's incredible.
Yeah, the transmitters they bought from Marconi were built right there in Cincinnati. British Marconi came in, bought Cincinnati Electronics so they could get around the Buy American type clause. And they built 22, 27, whatever, 500 kilowatt transmitters. There's one still in Cincinnati, about 5 miles from the station where it was built. And all those transmitters are burning up.
Mm-hmm.
Because VOA engineering management decided they didn't need to send the people to school to teach them how to tune them and how to set them up. So the audio and modulators are burning up in these things. And they've contracted with Continental Electronics now for like $30,000 a piece or something. And, no, $300,000. $300,000 a piece to come in and retrofit solid-state modulators on all these transmitters. When, you know, the transmitter probably would work if it was set up right.
So if you had the proper training and the proper investment in the time and personnel,
right,
you wouldn't be spending the money.
Right. So we're spending another $300 million on every one of those 22 transmitters.
John, this seems incredible, I'll tell you. And, you know, I hope that somewhere down the road we have a chance to talk with you again about VOA, and it's on a positive side.
So I hope so, too.
John, thanks for being with us.
Anytime.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.